Numbers chapter 6, I want to talk about this vow of the Nazirite. It was absolutely voluntary. Nobody had to do this. And straight away, you get a message to you that it's not a case of just keeping God's commandments and thinking, well, didn't do too bad today. If you truly love God, you will want to give your life to him. You will want to not just be a minimalist, but to absolutely make a special effort, take an initiative to serve him. And this was a channel through which the Israelites could do that. And you notice that it was a man or a woman. Both men and women could do this. So it was totally voluntary. But in Amos 2, God says, I raised up your young men as Nazirites. So you see there this sort of interplay between human absolute free will and free volition, and yet God also working somehow. And you think of how Samson was a Nazirite from his birth. He was told, his mother was told, he will be a Nazirite from the womb. Samuel, it seems, also. So, sure, there's free will, and yet there is this higher hand. Because if our relationship with God was just a matter of human free will, well, who would stand? Because we are too weak. There is this grace of God working in this higher way, through his grace, through his spirit, the Greek word for grace, charis, is the same word for gift. God gives. God takes initiative. He is not simply waiting there to meet people who make free will decisions. His grace is beyond that. He is the prime mover. So they were to shave their heads when they finished the vow. And yet that was an act of shame, as we know from 1 Corinthians 11. And so, you know, God was asking them to go absolutely against the norms of their society. So then, verse 3, he shall separate himself from wine and strong drink, drink no vinegar of wine or vinegar of fermented drink, neither shall he drink any grape juice, nor eat fresh grapes or even dried grapes, sort of sultana kind of things. Now, these were the requirements for the priests on duty, the same language used about them in Leviticus 10. The idea is that the ordinary Israelite, both man and woman, could act like the priest. And even more, they were to grow their hair long, which would have recalled the mitre, the crown, on the head of the high priest. And in fact, the word for the crown of the high priest is from the same root, N-Z-R, N-Z-R, as the word Nazirite. So then, the idea is that they could rise up to the spirit of priesthood, or even of the high priesthood. It was God's intention that all Israel should be a kingdom of priests to him and a holy nation, but that didn't work out, and so God amended, I think, his plan of operation and worked through the Levites. That didn't particularly work out either, and you know, the priesthood is so often criticized as the root cause for Israel's undoing, all through the prophets. And yet, when you come to the New Testament, 1 Peter 2, we are a kingdom of priests. It's gone back to plan A, that we are all in the spirit of priesthood. Very easy to think, well, the religious stuff is best done by specialists. Leave it to the specialists, leave it to the pastor, leave it to the managing board, leave it to the evangelism committee, the preaching committee, or whatever. I'm just a small fry. I just go to church and, I'll put some money in the bag and that's it. No, you see, we are all called to the spirit of priesthood and even high priesthood, because all that is true of Jesus becomes true for us. The way into the holiest was opened when the veil was ripped down when Jesus died. And in Hebrews, the argument is, so therefore with boldness you should go into the most holy place. Well, who went into the most holy place once a year? It was the high priest. And why? To attain or to achieve somehow, to get forgiveness for others, for the people. And that then is to be our spirit. Now, these sort of high callings, that this is a huge call to spiritual ambition rather than the mire of mediocrity and leaving all this to other people. This can take over your life. And this was the idea of the vow of the Nazarite. So the Nazarite was separated from wine because we're told he was separated unto the Lord. And this is the idea of the Hebrew word for separation or holiness. Yes, it does mean separated from, but it means separated unto as well. It's not all negative. You mustn't do this. Don't do that. Yeah, because you are separated unto the service of God, therefore, in a natural sense, you are separated from the ways of this world. Why don't you go down the pub and go drinking with the guys from work on Friday night? Not because, ooh, I mustn't do that, we must be separate from the world, but because I am doing something better Friday night. Oh, sorry, guys, I'm whatever. I'm visiting an old lady. I am taking a new computer to some old guy who's in a nursing home who doesn't have a computer. And I'd like to preload it with some Bible talks and videos and stuff like that so the old guy can actually have some spiritual feeding because he's stuck there on his own. So Friday night, I'm sorry, guys, I'm otherwise occupied. You're separated from because you're separated unto. So verse 4, all the days of his separation, he shall eat nothing that is made of the grapevine, from seeds even to the skins. Now the idea was that he was not to, or she was not to drink alcohol. And you could say that, well, yeah, but the seeds of the vine and the skins of grapes and grape juice, etc., there's no alcohol in there. That is true, but I think here you have God himself setting some sort of fence around the law, forbidding something which isn't wrong of itself, in order to prevent developing even the mental association or the suggestion of that which is forbidden. Well, you could say that we are not to set fences around the law, that God could do it, but we are not to do it, possibly, but I think the idea is sound enough, in principle, that we are to avoid that which, whilst not sinful of itself, has suggestions which will put ideas in our mind which may lead us to failure, to sin, to breaking the covenant we have made with God. And that, I think, is fair enough, because we are weak. I mean, have you not figured that much from your spiritual walk so far? We're faced with a temptation and we very often give into it. Let's face it. And why do we do that? Often because of a complex process of subliminal thinking. Something, as I say, which is not wrong in itself, puts some suggestion in the mind that later we will give into. Now, this is why I urge you not to read or watch things which are on and on about sin. And that is a fair chunk of novels. It's a fair chunk of what passes for entertainment in this world. You may say, oh, but there's nothing wrong with watching that. There's nothing wrong with reading it, looking at it, because I'm not doing it. No, you are not at this stage. But those ideas are put in the mind. This is how advertising works, that an image is put in your mind. And you want that for yourself. And this is how the flesh works, I'm afraid. So fences around the law, we can maybe discuss this afterwards, but I don't think fences around the law, as long as they are not taken to extremes, are just worshipped for themselves. I think that these do have, according to what God himself does here, that they do have some validity. So then, verse 5, all the days of his vow of separation, no razor will come upon his head until the days are fulfilled. He shall be holy. Now, I've said that the word for Nazarite can mean crowned, and the word for the mitre on the head of the high priest is a related word, a very similar sounding word to Nazirite. Now, again, I remind us what I said earlier, that you can rise up to the spirit of the high priest of Jesus. So then, this is a huge call, an absolutely huge call, that we are not simply to benefit from the work of Jesus, to look upon his cross as some sort of an icon, but to realize that the spirit of that can be mine. We're told in verse 6, all the days that he separates himself to Yahweh, he shall not go near a dead body. So again, not only not touching a corpse, but not going near one. And again, this is the very same legislation that was given to the priests in Leviticus 21. They were not to drink wine when they were on duty, and they were also not to touch dead bodies, not to defile themselves. So again and again, it is the appeal to the spirit of priesthood for a man or a woman, which is a really radical idea. So then, these laws, I think, were to encourage them to see that. But when you look at the life of Samson, I mean, he did touch dead bodies, loads of them, killed loads of people, and yet it would seem that God accepted his Nazirite vow as intact until his hair was cut off. So again, you see that God isn't interested in legalism for its own sake and obedience to letters of the law. It is all the same, all about the spirit of it. Verse 7, he shall not make himself unclean for his father, his mother, his brother, or his sister when they die. Now that, again, is the same legislation as for the high priest. It's in Leviticus 21, if you want to check. So, again, they are being encouraged to rise up to the spirit not only of priesthood, but of the high priest himself. And Jesus seems to allude to this command in Matthew 10, 37, where he seems to be saying that devotion to him must come before these family relationships with parents and siblings. So it's as if, yes, he understood this as meaning you are all on high priestly duty. And he was saying this to really rough guys. I mean, Peter says in his letter that, you know, we used to go in the way of the Gentiles, did we not? We, he says, we, including himself. Orgies, drinking parties, he talks about crazy, wild behavior. This sort of guy Peter was. And here he is, in Matthew 10 there, he's being invited, along with all of them, to rise up to the spirit of the high priesthood. It's a huge challenge, not a difficult one of itself, but it's difficult to lift your sights that high, to have that spirit of ambition. So then, verse 8, all the days of his separation he is holy to Yahweh. He is separated to Yahweh. Now, Paul uses that language when he talks about his own preaching work, and he said, I was separated unto the gospel of God. It's as if he feels that although he's been called to do it, that he was to be the apostle to the Gentiles, yet he also feels that it was a voluntary thing. And he, as I say, several times, Romans, Galatians, Acts, he talks about how he has been separated unto this work. In Philippians 3, he says, I'm not yet perfected. I've not yet finished my course. As if he feels he's under this Nazirite vow. When he says that I will not drink wine because it might offend others in Romans 14. It's the very same words in the Septuagint out of this passage in Numbers 6 about the Nazirite not drinking wine. Well, as I say, Paul in one sense was called to be the apostle to the Gentiles, and yet he also chose to do it. And as I say, the Nazirite vow was voluntary, and yet Amos says that God raised up young men to be Nazirites. Well, I say that this is the mystery to some degree of God's sovereign hand taking the initiative, and yet also human free will Human volition, on the other hand, absolutely, genuinely so. Well, at the end of it, when he comes to the end of the period, verse 11, the priest shall offer for him a sin offering and make atonement for him. And why do you have to offer a sin offering at the end of the whole thing? That was verse 14. Why do you have to offer a sin offering? Well, I think Jesus has this in mind in Luke 17, where he says, when you shall have done all those things commanded you, you shall say, we are unprofitable servants. In other words, if you think you've made a special effort, a special dedication to God, don't pat yourself on the back and think, well, I am thereby justified. Not at all. Absolutely not at all. And so, as I say, the woman was to shave her head, which would have been a sign of shame. Quite clearly, it was a sign of shame for a woman to shave her head. Why have you done that? Well, because I've just finished my vow of the Nazarite. So, as I say, I think you see here how we are not to justify ourselves by our works. We are not to consider that because I made a special devotion, because I did save up some money, but I gave it to this cause or that cause, because I made this special effort for that brother or that sister, therefore I am sort of okay. There was a sin offering to be made, I think, not because they were sinful by nature or anything like that, but rather to just recognize that, yeah, I am imperfect. And as Jesus said, having done all, you should still say, you know, we are unprofitable servants. We've only done that which was our duty to do. That is important, very important, lest we become self-congratulatory. It is that which God doesn't like at all, because it is not of works, lest any man should boast. And all the way through our lives, including in these moments of special dedication, we are to ever remind ourselves that it is all of grace, that I am in the end a sinner, and it is all of grace.